following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh. And she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
Aha! Hello and welcome to a Wednesday. I'm Nicole Sandler coming to you live on Progressive Voices Network, along with NicoleSandler.com and YouTube and Facebook Live and Periscope and, you know, however you have found us. Welcome to the show. It's another crazy day in America. A lot going on and a lot to deal with today. Coming up, our guest on today's program is my friend Jason Leopold. Jason is senior investigative reporter at BuzzFeed News, and he has broken so many stories, including a big one just last week as we were watching the insanity going on around the protests and the police response to the protests. Jason Leopold broke a new story about new sweeping surveillance powers that were given to the DEA. The DEA, the Drug Enforcement Administration. Really? The DEA is supposed to only have powers to deal with drug charges. So we'll get the whole story from Jason. There have been developments in the story since last week when the story broke. But Jason Leopold is the guy that the government has nicknamed the FOIA terrorist. See, this is a problem because Jason Leopold is a journalist and a really damn good one. And he's mastered the art of the FOIA request, FOIA, Freedom of Information Act. It is a legal process by which not only journalists, but citizens can obtain information because allegedly here in the United States, we have some level of transparency, or we're supposed to anyway. Boy, how things have changed since that was supposed to be the basis on which the nation was formed. Yeah, but not so much. So we'll speak with Jason. I got a lot of news to go through, and I realized that yesterday I was so wound up that I never got to a funny. You know, those of you who are new to the program, because now we're live at 5, welcome. I like to try to start the show or somewhere in the opening moments of the program to play something that brings forth a laugh or two, because invariably things get kind of serious throughout the course of the hour. And I know laughter is really good medicine. So what I stumbled upon is during the course of this pandemic, a number of really creative people around the world who have been making really fun, funny parody videos. And so I came across this one guy who's in South Africa, who's a recording artist. His real name is David Scott, but he goes by the professional name of The Kiffness, K-I-F-F-N-E-S-S. And he's made some, the regular listeners of the program could tell you, he's made some of the most amazing parody songs, videos, because he is a musician. He's a working musician. And I think his format of choice basically is like electronica music, but he's done some incredible song parodies. I'll put a link on the blog today, along with, you know, I'll put in today's video as well. I'll post the whole thing so you can see it. Those of you who are just listening, perhaps on Progressive Voices and don't see the video feed, I will make sure to share that with you. And the Kiffness has been kind of quiet for the last 3 weeks. I think he might have gotten to a little bit of hot water. He recorded a version of he's in South Africa, if I didn't already say that, of the South African national anthem and a couple of videos showing that something weird was going on. Anyway, so it had been about 3 weeks and this guy's really prolific. And then finally today, sure enough, a new video from the Kiffness popped up on my computer screen. and I was so happy to see it. And this one is really good, and it works. You know, I've hesitated to play a comedy bit in the last few days because our situation is so dire. George Floyd was buried, was laid to rest yesterday. And that's probably why I didn't play one, because there was just nothing appropriate for the occasion. But this one, this new one from the Kiffness, is really good. And it fits the mood that we're all experiencing right now. So with no further ado, and yes, I will post it for those of you who are only hearing the audio feed, that's good enough. But the video adds another element to it. So I will post it on the blog after the show at NicoleSandler.com. You can always find the day's podcast on my blog at NicoleSandler.com/the date. So for today, it would be 6-10-20. It's that simple. And I post every day's show there. So if you missed it when it's happening, you can always get it there. And the usual podcast apps as well. All right. I'm delaying, and I don't know why, because it's really, really good. So with no further ado, take it away, the Kiffness.
Hey, June, this month's been bad. Things went mad wrong instead of better. Come September, 2020 needs a restart. Then we can start to make it better. Hey June, we're all afraid. Opposing worldviews on social media. The minute you let them under your skin, don't you begin to be a hater. Feel insane.
Awesome was that. Hey, June. Hey, June. Yes. The Kiffness. You can find his channel on YouTube. And again, he makes these wonderful parodies. And that one, I think, fit the mood perfectly. All right. There's a lot of news to get to today. We will in a moment. But again, as we started yesterday, we're trying something new, because we are streaming on the Progressive Voices channel live now at 5 o'clock Eastern every day. So we're running commercials on that stream. So, fingers crossed, let's give it a shot again. We'll take a very quick break. We'll be right back on the Progressive Voices Network. All right. I think Progressive Voices is in spots right now. So while it's just you and me, oh, and I should run a timer so I know when a few minutes is up and I can end the spots and get back to this. But it's us. So by the way, should you care to call in, I know somebody, we had a very... somebody who was persistently calling yesterday, but it wasn't working. The way it works on this program, basically any time during the first half hour, if there's you've got a burning comment to make, feel free to call in. I work alone. I'm my own producer, engineer, board op, everything. So I don't have anyone screening phone calls. But if you want to call in, you can. 954-889-6410 is the number, or you can Skype to Nicole Sandler. If I answer your call, I will take it live. If I don't, you know, well, it's just because I'm busy in something else. So I'll tell you what, while we are waiting for the Progressive Voice stream to come back, I want to share with you something that I watched some of. There was a hearing this morning, a hearing in the House Judiciary Committee about racial profiling and police violence. And George Floyd's brother, Philonese, I think is how you pronounce his name, spoke very passionately and eloquently. He made a 5-minute statement. That's about all I saw of the hearing today. But I want to share with you some of what he said. This is a man who has not been in the spotlight before, certainly has never testified before a congressional committee about anything as serious as police brutality and certainly the death of a family member. But here's a little bit of what Philonese Floyd had to say today to the House Judiciary Committee.
He was our gentle giant. I was reminded of that when I watched the video of his murder. He called all the officers sir. He was mild-mannered. He didn't fight back. He listened to all the officers. The man who took his life, who suffocated him for 8 minutes and 46 seconds, he still called them sir as he begged for his life. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you the kind of pain you feel when you watch something like that. When you watch your big brother, who you looked up to your whole entire life, die begging for his mom. Ugh. I'm tired.
Heartbreaking.
I'm tired of pain. Pain you feel when you watch something like that. When you watch your big brother, who you looked up to for your whole life, die begging for his mom? I'm here to ask you to make it stop. Stop the pain. Stop us from being tired. George called for help and he was ignored. Please listen to the call I'm making to you now.
Yeah.
To the calls of our family and the calls ringing out the streets across the world. People of all backgrounds, genders and races have come together to demand change. Honor them. Honor George. Yes. And make the necessary changes that make law enforcement the solution and not the problem. Hold them accountable when they do something wrong. Teach them what it means to treat people with empathy and respect. Teach them what necessary force is. Teach them that deadly force should be used rarely and only when life is at risk. George wasn't hurting anyone that day. He didn't deserve to die over $20. I'm asking you, is that what a black man is worth? $20?
Heartbreaking.
This is 2020. Enough is enough. The people marching in the streets are telling you enough is enough. By the leaders that in our country, the world needs the right thing. The people elected you to speak for them, to make positive change. George's name means something. You have the opportunity here today to make your names mean something too. If his death ends up changing the world for the better, and I think it will, then he died as he lived. It is on you to make sure his death is not in vain.
Again, that was Philonese Floyd, George Floyd's younger brother, who made a point to mention during his remarks today that he is now the older brother. George was his big brother. He's now the big brother of the family. It's heartbreaking. It's just horribly sad. But at least the family, I mean, they have this feeling that their brother is changing the world, has changed the world. will change the world. Now, just a couple of weeks, or a week even, or a few weeks, I'm sorry, before George Floyd was murdered at the hands of the Minneapolis police, four of them anyway, four members of the Minneapolis Police Department, a woman in Louisville, Kentucky, was gunned down in her own home. Now, we've talked about Breonna Taylor before. In fact, it was her birth. She would have been 27 last week. And today, finally, 3 months after Louisville Metro police officers fatally shot Breonna Taylor in her apartment, the department has released the incident report from that night. And it is disgusting. It's almost entirely blank. I'm reading to you from the Louisville Courier-Journal, who writes, the four-page report lists the time, date, case number, incident location, and the victim's name, Breonna Shaquille Taylor, as well as the fact that she was a 26-year-old black female. The article points out that it redacts her address, the street number, apartment number, and date of birth, all of which have been widely reported. And here's where it gets really horrible. It lists her injuries as, quote, none. None, even though she was shot at least 8 times and died on her hallway floor in a pool of blood. It lists the charges as death investigation, LMPD involved, but it checks the no box under forced entry, even though officers used a battering ram to knock in her apartment door using a no-knock warrant. It also lists under the offenders portion of the report the three officers who fired inside her apartment, Sergeant John Mattingly, 47 years old, Miles Cosgrove, 42, and Brett Hankinson, 44. But the most important portion of the report, the narrative of events that spells out what happened on March 13th, has only two words, PIU investigation. And the rest of the report has no information filled in at all. Of course, I had to look up what PIU investigation means, Public Integrity Unit. Seriously? The editor of the newspaper that I'm reading to you from, the Louisville Courier-Journal, said, I read this report and I have to ask the mayor, the police chief, and the city's lawyers, are you kidding? This is what you consider being transparent to taxpayers and the public? And then he continued, at a time when so many are rightfully demanding to know more details about that tragic March evening, I fail to understand this lack of transparency. The public deserves more. Again, this happened at about 12:40 a.m. Taylor and her boyfriend, Kenneth Walker, were asleep in bed when the three plainclothes officers used this no-knock warrant signed by District Judge Mary Shaw to enter her home as part of an alleged narcotics investigation. The officers say, although it's not on the incident report, they say they announced their presence, but her boyfriend, Kenneth Walker, and several neighbors say they did not. Walker has said he thought intruders were trying to break in and fired a warning shot that struck one of the officers, Mattingly, in the leg. Hankinson and Cosgrove are now on administrative reassignment pending the investigation. The detective who requested the warrant, somebody named Joshua James, has also been reassigned, but that's about all we know. And the lawyer, John Fleischacker, who's the counsel for the newspaper and one of the principal authors of the state's open records law that requires the release of public documents in all but extremely rare circumstances, said this document is proof that Louisville Metro Police Department continues to make a mockery of transparency. Under the Fisher Amendment, he said, there has been a consistent policy and practice of refusing to tell the public what is going on with the police, regardless of how inappropriate the officer conduct has been, even when it was criminal, as in the LMPD Explorer case. So the Courier Journal, the newspaper, is suing the police department, seeking the immediate release of the department's investigative file in the shooting. Something else was released, and that's the 911 call placed by Kevin Walker, Breonna Taylor's boyfriend. But it was only released by the police department after one of Taylor's attorneys, family's attorneys, gave it to the news media. Now, I'm going to play it for you, but I'm warning you, this is really difficult to listen to. And one of the most frustrating things, when I first heard it, I was screaming. My daughter walked in here and said, "What's the matter?" I was screaming because the 911 operator isn't even fucking paying attention to what this obviously distressed man is calling about. You'll hear, he says, "My girlfriend's been shot by an intruder." And the operator says, "Is she responsive? And, you know, can she hear you? Is she responsive?" And he says, "No." And then a minute later, she asks the same question again. All right, so brace yourself. Here's that 911 call placed by Kenneth Walker is his name. Sorry.
Operator Harris, what is their emergency?
I don't know what's happening. Somebody kicked in the door inside my girlfriend.
Okay, where are you located?
I'm at 3003 Springfield Drive, apartment 4.
3003 Springfield Drive, apartment number 4?
Yes.
She's just so lax.
Oh, my God.
Like,
okay, how old is your girlfriend?
How old is your girlfriend?
She's,
who cares? She's bleeding.
I'm 26. Bring it. Oh,
you said 26?
God.
Where was she shot at?
I don't know. She's on the ground right now. I don't know.
She's on the ground right now.
I don't know.
He's crying.
You said she's 26. Is she alert and able to talk to you?
Oh, my God. Is she alert and able to talk to you?
Bring. God, I'm just...
Okay, you said you're in apartment number 4.
Oh, my. Yes, he already said that. You have it. Send somebody.
What's your name, sir?
Oh, my name is Kenneth Walker.
You said Kenneth. And you said she's 26.
Oh, my God. That's the third time
okay,
he asked her age.
3003 Springfield Drive,
God.
Apartment number 4.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you check and see where she's been shot at?
You asked that already.
Okay. Is she alert and able to talk to you?
You asked that already! Are you not listening to what he's saying? It's amazing to me the inhumanity of this 911 operator.
Can you get her turned over on her back? I need you to check her and see where she shot at.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I'm going to go, Mama. Okay. I'm going to call you back.
Kenneth, can you hear me?
And then he hung up. And then she tries to call him back, and he doesn't answer. She asked him 3 times how old she was. 26! She asked him, "Is she responsive and able to talk to you?" He said no. And then she asked again, after she again asked his age. What the actual fuck? This is unbelievable. And I don't know, Gene is asking in the chat room, where are the cops right now? Because they broke down the door with a battering ram and came in and shot her 8 times. I'm sorry. I'm distressed by this, as we all should be. How does this happen in America? And how are those cops, they're on administrative reassignment? Are you kidding me? I just, this is astounding that this shit goes on. Just astounding. And there's more to tell you about. I'm Bill Barr is having a really bad day. And that's okay with me. First, regarding his efforts to, sorry for the quick, you know, change, but let me share with you this. Right. And the cops went into the wrong apartment. No mention of that on the incident report either. It's just Sickening. Okay, but on to Bill Barr, because he's sickening too. So, you know, it was a couple of weeks ago, Bill Barr announced the Department of Justice wanted to just, you know, forget that whole case against Michael Flynn, his conviction for perjury and lying to the FBI. And Barr told the judge, Emmett Sullivan, just, you know, drop the charges. Let's just dismiss this and move on. And Emmett Sullivan said, hell no, I don't work for you. I'm a judge, a U.S. District Court judge. And what he decided to do was, rather than go along with Barr's bullshit dismissal of the charges to which Flynn already pled guilty, Sullivan paused the case. He said he wanted to hear from outside groups and appointed retired New York federal judge John Gleason to argue, to represent, I guess, us, we the people, against the DOJ's May 7th motion to immediately drop the prosecution. Well, today there was a formal briefing to Judge Sullivan by this retired judge, Gleason, and he called Barr's attempt to undo the conviction a, quote, gross abuse of prosecutorial power. He submitted an 82-page opinion, and in it, Gleason wrote, quote, Flynn has indeed committed perjury in these proceedings for which he deserves punishment, and the court has the authority to initiate a prosecution for that crime. I respectfully recommend, however, that the court not exercise that authority. Rather, it should take Flynn's perjury into account in sentencing him on the offense to which he has already admitted guilt. This approach, rather than a separate prosecution for perjury or attempt, aligns with the court's intent to treat this case and this defendant in the same way it would any other. Yes! A full hearing is scheduled on July 16th. So that happened today, but that's not all. More than 1,250 former Justice Department workers today signed on to a letter to the Inspector General of the Justice Department, Michael Horowitz, calling for an investigation into Barr's involvement in the law enforcement move, if you could call it that, last Monday, to push the crowd of peaceful protesters back from Lafayette Square using horses, tear gas, yes, tear gas, and flashbangs. Quote, in particular, we are disturbed by Attorney General Barr's possible role in ordering law enforcement personnel to suppress a peaceful domestic protest in Lafayette Square on June 1st, 2020, for the purpose of enabling Trump to walk across the street from the White House and stage a photo op at St. John's Church, a politically motivated event in which Attorney General Barr participated. That's a quote from this group of more than 1,250 former Justice Department officials to calling for an investigation. Oh, poor Bill Barr. He's having a bad day. I could be like John Oliver was toward Tucker Carlson the other night. I hope you watched that clip. He's having a bad day. I hope he's getting some exercise or some, you know, doing some yoga or doing something to, you know, feel better. No, I don't. Fuck you. Fuck you, Bill Barr. Fuck you and the horse you rode in on. Fuck you. Fuck you very, very much. All right. We've got Jason Leopold coming up in just a moment, so let's try one more quick break first from our friends, for our friends. Whoops, I got to get the right thing up here. This is a kind of cumbersome, clunky system, but you know, hey, I'll go with the flow. We'll be right back again with Jason Leopold. Oops, hold on. This one? Okay. On the Progressive Voices Network. All right. So while I get Jason on the line, and hopefully he should be there, let me share this with you, because you know this show runs on your generosity.
These are the sounds of crushed souls. The sounds of despair from former radio personalities languishing in the purgatory of corporate consolidation. These former radio personalities have lost their livelihoods, not because they weren't entertaining or informative, but because they don't meet today's corporate terrestrial broadcast standards of being smelly, overweight douchebags, seething with vein-popping hatred These radio refugees and their audiences have since migrated to the internet, but their struggle continues as the quest for monetization ensues. Nicole Sandler is leading the way to reestablishing thought-provoking and entertaining radio. And you can help by clicking the donate button on NicoleSandler.com. Donate today, or as much and as often as you can. Dry the tears of listeners by removing the rotting stench of corporate radio. Won't you help?
All right, I think we're back. And joining us now is my dear friend, the FOIA terrorist. There's nothing terroristic about him, Jason Leopold. Hey, Jace.
Hey, Nicole. It's so cool to see you in your whole studio setup. I love that.
And it's cool to see you too. Although there you go. Okay, now you're moving a little bit. I'm still trying all this new toys that I have with the setup,
like
so I can bring in video. Now you're seeing me from the side. You're not seeing the view that's going out to the
I can sort of see it on the screen.
Yeah. Oh, I can see it over there. So, Jason Leopold, first of all, how are you guys holding up with this whole pandemic craziness?
You know, it's still surreal. Obviously, what's surreal about it, honestly, is the fact that, you know, I have to live through it, but also have to report on it. So, right. You know, serving as in these two different capacities, one is, you know, a father trying to get my son to acclimate to going to school online, and at the same time kind of, you know, trying to find out what happened behind the scenes reporting on it. And it's just quite surreal, you know, to tell you the truth. It's nice to be in LA. It feels a bit more stable here, if you will, but it's been hard. And, you know, and at BuzzFeed, we've actually gone through some furloughs. We've lost some really, 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 really amazing journalists as a result of this because of the economic downturn.
Right. So, now, I saw that you wrote that in a message to me last night, that you're saying goodbye to all these friends. Now, did they expect that these people will eventually come back, or do you think those jobs are gone?
It's unclear, but it also seems unlikely. I mean, it doesn't feel like anything's getting better yet, you know, economically, which I'm sure you and I can, you know, can sit here and talk about this for some time, which is just unbelievable to me to see what's playing out in real time, where you have massive unemployment, an economy that's tanking, a pandemic, you know, protests over police brutality and the death of George Floyd. It feels like there's a perfect storm. And it's remarkable to actually, even just through, you know, just going back to the pandemic, just knowing that there's more than 100,000 people who died, and the president has, if I'm not mistaken, hasn't made any comment about that.
No, because he's more concerned with the stock market than with, you know, the lives that are being lost. And now today he's announced that starting, I guess, next week, he's going to pick up, start doing rallies again in places like Florida and Arizona, two states where the numbers of infections are on the rise again. It's insane. Yeah. The whole thing's
it
insane.
It is. And it does feel insane, and it's exhausting, but you know, the work still needs to be done. The reporting still needs to be done. So it's you know, got at this point, you have to report these stories, in my personal opinion, for historical purposes and reasons, because they are completely trying to cover up what took place behind the scenes, what's been happening, what the documents say. I mean, I can tell you just on the coronavirus, COVID-19, you know, the pandemic, I already have like two or three Freedom of Information Act lawsuits against the government, against a wide range of agencies. And the reason I have that is because we don't know what happened really behind the scenes. We need to see those documents. We need to see what the CDC, you know, how they communicated with the White House task force. There is a lack of transparency, and the public needs to really know what's been taking place.
We do, but when they do talk to us, they lie. So it's like I don't believe anything that comes out of this administration. Jason, do you?
No. I mean, right? I have to tell you, Nicole, I don't believe it. And honestly, you know, I have questions for all administrations because I never, you know, I never just take the word for it. To my right over here, you can't see it, but I have a poster from I.F. Stone, who was a former, you know, the late muckraking journalist I.F. Stone. And it was based on, it's a movie poster from a documentary he did, but it's titled All Governments Lie. And, you know, that's the maxim, if you will, that I kind of live by. And it's why I ask for documents. I want to see what they're actually saying.
Right. And so, it should be noted that I believe it was the Obama administration who dubbed you the FOIA terrorist. Wasn't
correct.
It? Yeah, this has been going on for a while. I should also mention, before we get into this current story, that on Friday, former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman will be here for the better part of hour. He has a new book out called, and I have it in the other room. I've got like 20 pages left, Stealing Our Democracy. And although I knew about his case, he was targeted by Karl Rove and set up and prosecuted. He was like the original political prisoner in this country. And what was done to him is just reprehensible. And as I'm reading this book, it's all coming back to me, and even more because I wasn't aware of a lot of, you know, the machinations that went on in the courtroom and the stuff that Karl Rove and that Bush Justice Department did to this man who was a Democratic governor of Alabama is just unbelievable. And I bring that up because you've had your own run-ins with Karl Rove in covering him and trying to, right?
I have. Yes, I have. It's funny. I mean, obviously, it seems like a lifetime ago that took place with Don Siegelman.
Yeah.
But I remember very well reporting on it when it was happening and the politicization that was taking place as it related to his case. And the prosecutorial, the alleged prosecutorial misconduct. So that was chilling at that time.
It was chilling. And so when you look at what this Trump administration is doing and the Bill Barr Justice Department, can you say it's worse than the Bush Justice Department under Alberto Gonzalez when they fired all of those U.S. attorneys that they had appointed in the first place because they weren't doing their political bidding strongly enough? I mean, is there any difference between the two?
That's a really, really good question. And I think it's a question that has not been asked. And it's really important. I just had a conversation with a friend just moments before I started speaking with you, and we were discussing history and, you know, the fact that people don't really have right now a good grasp on history.
Uh-uh.
We have to remember what the Justice Department, you know, under George Bush, there was an Office of Legal Counsel there, and that Office of Legal Counsel created a memorandum that essentially gave the Bush administration and the CIA the authorization to torture, right? So that's
right.
That's bad. That's beyond bad. It's a crime. There were efforts to try to bring these folks up on war crimes. In essentially ways in which they tried to twist the law to fit the intelligence or the facts, at the Justice Department, at these other agencies, but specifically at the Justice Department, things happened that were arguably far worse than what's happening now. Right. I would say that as it relates to the Bush's first term, it was worse. It was worse because of what they actually did in terms of how it related to the law. Mm-hmm. Here, under Barr, it is becoming progressively worse. What's important to note about Barr is he's actually only been attorney general for a little over a year.
Wow. Well, this time he was.
This time, yes. Back in the 90s, you know, he has a history. But under right now, but the way in which he has completely turned that department on its head is just unreal. And the ways in which he is apparently doing Bush at Trump's bidding is it's remarkable to see. So the difference is that under Bush, we didn't see that play out so openly, so publicly.
Right.
Right. It took years and years and years to understand how they did that. So it does make it worse now to some degree. I know I'm sounding like a contradiction, just to see what's happening. But it's also there's a benefit to it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, because it gives you at least an effort to, you know, to do something about it, to, you know, to challenge it. So, so it's funny. You know, in one of my cases, you know, the judge presiding over my efforts to unredact the full Mueller report, he issued an opinion, essentially said that Bill Barr cannot be trusted.
Right.
Called him a liar, said he misled the public.
Wow.
This is playing out now where, you know, another judge is saying that, you know, the Michael Flynn case should not be dismissed.
I just reported on that. This is the guy that the judge, Sullivan, appointed to be basically be the people's advocate and to argue, you know, against what Bill Barr wants, which is a complete, you know, dismissal of the charges against him to which he had already pled guilty. So, I reported on that right at the top of the show. This judge, a retired judge, John Gleason, said, hell no, you need to prosecute this guy. You need to sentence him for what he's already been found guilty of.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So you can see that, you know, the ways in which the, you know, this Justice Department is and Bill Barr acting as Trump's personal attorney. And it honestly, it, you know, to kind of use that comparison with the Bush administration, it remains to be seen what they have done that we don't know about. Right. Whether when it comes to like legal opinions you know, any efforts that may, you know, pertain to national security or operations that we don't know about.
Right.
So, and it will take time to learn that. But as we can see it playing out publicly right now, it's terrible. And as I reported last week, you know, the story that we're going to talk about, that is one example.
Well, let's go into it. So it was just a week ago today, I believe, that you broke another big scoop. You keep doing this, Jason. You reported about a memo from the DEA to Justice requesting this new authority to conduct covert surveillance and collect intelligence on people participating in protests over the killing of George Floyd. And a senior Justice Department official signed off on it last week. Barr issued a statement in which he blamed, without providing evidence, anarchistic and far-left extremists using Antifa-like tactics. Give me a fucking break. So this story, the DEA, that DEA is Drug Enforcement Administration. Are they supposed to be used in this manner and to spy on citizens?
No. Have they done it before? Yes. Have they done it at back in 1992 or earlier that when Bill Barr was Attorney General? Yes. So there's history there. And just to kind of break this down for you, this is a memo that was prepared on May 31st, right? Just as Barr released a statement calling Antifa and protesters more or less, you know, terrorists.
Right. Yes.
And a day after Trump tweeted the same. I checked the metadata on that memo. That metadata says it was prepared by the DEA's Deputy Chief Counsel, Robert Gleason. What's really important to note here is if you can see it on the story, the memo says it was addressed. The person who was writing it or sending it, rather, was Timothy Shea.
Right.
He's the acting administrator of the DEA. He's also a close confidant of Barr, his former aide.
Of course he is.
He is also the U.S. attorney that overruled the prosecutors in the Michael Flynn case and went to court and sought the dismissal of the charges against Michael Flynn.
Wow.
He's only been at the DEA for about 2 weeks.
Seriously? Oh, my God.
So this memo is extraordinary because it's essentially the Justice Department has granted the DEA these sweeping new powers to spy on protesters, to collect intelligence, to essentially, you know, enforce any federal crime, to question them, to interrogate them. There is nothing built into the memo that protects the constitutional rights of people participating in protest to speak freely, to exercise their First Amendment rights. So it appears to be, you know, like an operation. What I found after reporting this is that, you know, they sent, the DEA sent dozens of agents into Washington, D.C. They have agents from the Special Response Team, which is essentially the DEA's version of SWAT. Uh-huh. That's a group that also, or a team that also conducts surveillance. Agents coming in from Boston. There may have been as many as 150 there. It's wow. unclear. Wow. But this authority was granted to the DEA for 2 weeks, beginning on May 31st. So it remains to be seen whether it will be extended. And I think that it will likely be extended if the protests continue. So this was on a nationwide basis. It's not just for D.C. It's not just for Minneapolis. This is, a nationwide effort. And it's part of a larger effort where Bill, using Bill Barr's words, he is saying that he's there trying to get a federal law enforcement surge into the protests in an effort to essentially try to say that there are, you know, the protesters are part of an organized, you know, group. They're well funded, so it can support what Trump has said, which is they're terrorists, right?
Right.
So my sources and from what I've gathered just in the reporting over the past week, what I've seen is that they are moving quickly in that direction, and that, Nicole, is so unbelievably dangerous.
It is, but Jason Leopold, as I'm noticing, I've got an article up here from ABC News, dated last night. Intelligence Bulletin warning of protest-related violence makes little mention of, quote, Antifa, which we've discussed at length here, because there is no such, it's not an organization.
That's
and
right.
And the only way it's mentioned in here is sort of like in a footnote as an aside, and it's this reporting has been echoed by everyone from The Nation to NPR to BuzzFeed right. News and everyone beyond. This is gaslighting, pure and simple. There is no Antifa doing this. And in fact, when you dig into these reports, we see that it's a lot of white supremacist groups.
That's right.
In some cases, the Klan, right? And they don't go there. They don't call out any right-wing nutjobby organizations. They don't call out the Klan or white supremacists as they should.
Well, that's what makes this dangerous, Nicole, is that they're targeting people who... They're claiming are terrorists or anarchists. Bill Barr's doing so without any evidence.
Yep.
Trump is doing it without any evidence. And essentially, I don't know if it's to, you know, convince their base or maybe the public at large who's unclear, you know, on what Antifa is.
Uh-huh.
Without, as you noted, without mentioning the people that actually have been identified as infiltrating or participating by agencies like the FBI, whether you believe the FBI or not, which are, you know, well-known white supremacist groups.
Right.
So, the documents that have been released that, you know, the intelligence bulletins, for example, that you were citing from, there's no evidence there. And we already know that in New York, the people who were picked out of protests and were questioned for, you know, for whatever reason, whether it's they were accused of committing some sort of crime, they've been also questioned by the FBI and they've been asked about their Antifa ties. So there is a concerted effort to try and target these people. And when I say these people, I don't mean these people, you know, who are Yeah, they're part of an imaginary organization.
Right. They're individual people. Know, right?
Yeah.
So, I changed my Twitter name to anti-fascist Nicole Sandler because the whole thing is just so insane. They're, you know, and for them to go after, quote, Antifa, when you realize anti-fascist, so they're going right. against the people who are against fascism?
Yeah. Well, yes. I mean, look what we're doing. We're trying to understand the insanity that, behind what they're, why they're doing what they're doing.
Right.
But that's what also makes it so dangerous. Okay. You have the Attorney General of the United States using the full force mm-hmm. of the FBI, the DEA, the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, ATF, the Department of Homeland Security, the National Guard to target, prosecute individuals who are exercising the First Amendment rights.
It's astounding.
And to see this memo, when I looked at this memo, Nicole, I was blown away. The first thing I saw was covert surveillance. And I immediately went into reporter mode, which was, I need to get this story out. I need to write this story. And in the week since we've written this story, nearly 50 members of Congress, which includes powerful, Democrats, such as such as Dianne Feinstein, such as Mark Warner, the vice chairman of the Intelligence Committee. Feinstein's on the Judiciary Committee,
mm-hmm.
In the House, Joe Nadler. They've written to Barr, to Shea, and to say essentially, this has to stop. We demand you give us an immediate briefing. Which we know that the Justice Department will just thumb their nose at.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take more than just sending a letter, but at least they've put it on notice. And I think that's why it's important. This is my whole point about transparency, right? This is what I was saying at the beginning of the show, which was, this is why this information needs to be out. And the fact that we were able to get this out just, 2 days after it was signed is, I was amazed at that because I had no idea that this existed. So now we're trying to figure out if the FBI or DHS or any other agency has a similar authority. Have they been granted sweeping new, authorities like the DEA?
Right. You mentioned, the senators. You mentioned Jerry Nadler. Gerald Nadler heads up, is the chair of the House Judiciary Committee.
Right.
And Karen Bass is on that committee. The two of them responded Friday, calling the expansion of the drug agency's powers antithetical to the American people's right to peacefully assemble and to exercise their constitutional rights without undue intrusion. They demanded that Barr and Shea immediately rescind this new authority granted to the DEA and ask for a briefing detailing the timeline and rationale for the expansion of authority. That's, that's what I want to see, but we'll never get that, will we? Because they just say no. They say,
They say no to everything. I don't see that happening because one, I believe they've asked for that. Well, they asked for that to happen by today. So we'll see. It's already 6 o'clock on the East Coast. I kind of doubt it.
Yep.
So it'll take a follow up with, with Nadler. Feinstein and Warner and the Senate and Chuck Schumer and other senators who sent that in, they wanted information as of Monday. As far as I can tell, they've never received it.
Wow.
So, it's again, just ignoring the oversight. They're trying to perform some oversight.
Right.
And it's just being ignored.
But Jason, so in reading Don Siegelman's book, all these correlations are coming up, and I didn't realize it at the time. I didn't make the connection until, yesterday reading this passage, that Karl Rove did the same thing that the Trump flunkies are doing, just refused to testify, said refused to accept the invitation, refused to comply with subpoenas. When he finally did speak, it was not under oath. It was he got the questions in advance. I mean, this is nonsense. And I got to ask, do the Democrats ever play hardball like this with the Republicans, or do they just show up like Hillary Clinton did to testify for 11 hours because she was asked to?
Yeah, I haven't seen, a similar play, with the Democrats. And I think that, I remember that in the Bush years. I think it was Harriet Myers, who, if I'm not mistaken, was the White House counsel at the time. Democrats were trying to get her testimony.
Right.
But, there was a, quite an effort to, to block that. Here, it's on another level because they're simply just saying, nope, ignore it, ignore the subpoenas, ignore everything, because what's the only mechanism to enforce it? Well, you send the sergeant at arms out to arrest.
Well,
So they're essentially, it's a game of chicken. They're calling their bluff and that's it. And they put out a bunch of press releases, but they've already tested, it's gone as far as to say, this is it. You're ignoring the subpoena. Maybe they'll go to court. But again, the point is to try to get testimony in a timely manner, but mm-hmm. instead it's just being, it's being dragged out. So, there really is a, the way in which the full force of the Justice Department is being used against, citizens and how that's taking place right now and how, on the one hand, as we talked about earlier, it's sort of connected, but, seeing what the Justice Department is doing with Michael Flynn, and you have the same people now involved in trying and obtaining this expanded authority to spy on citizens. I mean, it's all the dots connect here.
Yeah, most definitely. And again, and I'm seeing as bad, we knew that the Bush administration was bad. And we know we're watching in real time just the undoing of norms and just the way things have always been done that weren't previously questioned. And it kills me to watch the Democrats still play by the old rules. Part of me says, well, good, they're doing what they should do because we need a sense of normalcy back again. But you got to fight fire with fire, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, I can understand your frustration, right? You're seeing the ways in which, whether it was during the Bush years, Cheney, the ways that in which these folks behaved, and seeing it a similar way now, but in some ways it's also far worse, and you feel powerless.
Yeah.
You want them to do something, but to do something that is aggressive, that is not playing chess, but is actually far more aggressive. And you're right, they're not doing it. So it's frustrating that they're not doing that. But people are left powerless. That's the thing. This is why, this gets into a whole other dynamic. Perhaps we can talk about it another time, but it's why fatigue starts to set in,
mm-hmm.
right? When you start to see this happening, and what I mean is a lack of accountability, right?
Yes.
You go back to the Bush years, there was no accountability, none. And people were just so upset because nobody was enforcing accountability. Nobody was being held accountable for lying, the country into war, for presenting a false case to invade Iraq and many, 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 many other things. And here, it's the same thing. And so that's what happens. People will start to tune out because they can't do anything else. But, if there is, a connection to what's happening, with regard to the protests, because I think that, to see people go to the White House as well, that's, what we have to look toward at this point as the only way to speak up, right?
Yeah, right.
And you can't count on your elected, representatives to... to do that at this point.
No, that's why we have to keep writing them to do the right thing. But look, we saw, the Republicans deny the last Democratic president the right to appoint or to nominate a Supreme Court justice for just about a year. They held that seat open. And we don't see the Democrats stopping any of the horrible appointments that Trump is making. I want to see them fight fire with fire. And frankly, our only line of defense really are our elected officials. We need to stay on them, and we need to stay in the streets. So, nothing. We've never seen anything like this in history before. And Jason Leopold,
I think that's the thing to keep in mind, is that this is, you know, for us, for people who have been around way longer, it may not be unique. But I think that for many people who have grown up post 9/11, right, or a little before, this is unique. This is new. They haven't seen anything like this. They don't have a grasp on history to understand, you know, what it was like before. So I agree.
Yeah, I hear you. Jason Leopold. All right. Progressive Voice has already ended. I've got to get my timing down better. But we're still going out to YouTube and everyone else. Thank you so much. The work you're doing is so important. I got to ask you one last question, since now we're in overtime anyway. Did I just see you tweet out something in the last day or two, that a FOIA request you made something like 7 years ago just came in?
Yes. Let me see here. Yes, Nicole, 7 years ago, I filed a request for some records, and I just got back. Oh, wait, let me just get it. I just got back some pages, some redactions.
Goodness. Oh, my God. They're all redacted. It's all redacted.
Yep. I waited. Oops, this is a good one.
Wow. It's a page.
Yeah, I waited 7 years for this, Nicole. Filed this in August of 2013.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my God. All right. Well, some things never change. And yet, and they're calling you a terrorist. So you're in good company. You and Martin Gangon, or however you pronounce his name. Anybody who doesn't, you know, drink the Donald Trump Kool-Aid, they feel compelled to call a terrorist. So I guess, you know, you embraced the term FOIA terrorist a couple of years ago. You know, wear it proudly, I suppose.
Thank you.
We are an opposite world.
I do.
Yeah. I know. Jason Leopold, you're the best. Find Jason, of course, at BuzzFeed News on Twitter, at Jason Leopold. And when you see a big breaking story that everyone is carrying, and chances are, if you trace it back, like with this DEA story being able to covertly surveil us, you can thank Jason Leopold. You're the best, Jason.
Right back at you, Nicole. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. I'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. The awesome Jason Leopold. All right. With that, we are done for the day. Tomorrow's Thursday. Howie Klein will be here. Friday, as I mentioned, Don Siegelman will be here. And we keep going. Thanks for listening. I'll see you tomorrow. You know what? I'm going to leave you because I didn't even get to Georgia and what happened with the primaries yesterday. So I'm going to play What's News. I'll let What's News play us out, because I did cover the insanity in not only Georgia, but Nevada as well. And remind everybody, do what you need to do to get a mail-in ballot, an absentee ballot, whatever. Because if you take your chances by going to a polling place on November 3rd, chances are you're going to be screwed over, just like they were in Nevada, where the last polling place closed at like 3:30 in the morning, because people were waiting in line for so many hours. In Georgia, it was well after midnight. This has got to stop. Our votes need to be counted. So vote by mail. All right. So I will leave you with today's What's News, and I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.
I read the news today. Oh, boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Georgia, Nevada, South Carolina, and West Virginia held primary elections on Tuesday. There were so many voting issues in Georgia that state officials are now calling for investigations. Voters waited in line for hours. Some precincts extended voting well into the night. Election officials blamed the delays on technical issues and a shortage of poll workers due to the pandemic. The state election board is already investigating the handling of absentee ballots in Atlanta's Fulton County. Of major concern now is the idea that these issues could be an ominous preview of what could happen in November's general election. Nevada also experienced widespread problems at the polls. Some voters were waiting in line for 3 hours or more at limited polling places in Las Vegas, despite Nevada officials encouraging people to vote by mail due to the coronavirus. Meanwhile, groups across the country are reporting growing voter registration numbers amid recent surges of activism. Other voter-oriented groups are seeing a rise in volunteer support and donations. Family, friends, and dignitaries gathered in Houston on Tuesday for the funeral of George Floyd, the unarmed black man killed in Minneapolis police custody 2 weeks ago. People who grew up with Floyd in Houston were in attendance, as were relatives of Eric Garner, a New York man who died in a police chokehold, and those of Ahmaud Arbery, a 25-year-old Georgia man fatally shot in February while jogging. Civil rights leader Reverend Al Sharpton delivered a eulogy, saying Floyd's death, quote, was not just a tragedy, it was a crime. And he pointed a finger at wickedness in high places.
You're sitting now trying to figure out how you're going to stop the protest rather than how you're going to stop the brutality. You're calling your cabinet in trying to figure out how it's going to affect your vote rather than how it's going to affect our lives. You're scheming on how you can spin the story rather than you can achieve justice, wickedness in high places. You take rubber bullets and tear gas to clear out peaceful protesters and then take a Bible and walk in front of a church and use a church as a prop. Wickedness in high places. You ain't been walking across that street when the church didn't have the boards up. You wasn't holding up no Bible when Aubrey was killed in Brunswick, when Taylor was killed in Louisville. Wickedness in high places.
Presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden appeared via video a day after meeting with the Floyd family in person in Houston.
Now is the time for racial justice. That's the answer we must give to our children when they ask why. Because when there is justice for George Floyd, we will truly be on our way to racial justice in America. And then, as you said, Gianna, your daddy will have changed the world.
Senate Republicans are now working on legislation to address police reform, one of many nationwide changes mobilized by ongoing protests over racism and police brutality. A task force led by the Senate's only black Republican member, Tim Scott of South Carolina, sent Republican offices a draft of a proposed Justice Act focused on issues of reporting, accountability, training, and community relations. This is a big turnaround for the Senate, which not long ago was dismissive of acting on the issue. Democrats already unveiled their own proposal, which goes further in dictating specific changes, including banning chokeholds. Officials in states, including New York, Florida, and California, already have moved to ban the use of neck restraints by police. In COVID news, at least 28 states are not following CDC guidelines for coronavirus reporting, which could make it more difficult for health experts and lawmakers to decide what to do next. The states are not reporting probable cases, which include people who show evidence of an infection without the confirmation of a lab test. Accurate rates of new cases help officials track how the disease is spreading and inform decisions about how and when to loosen restrictions. These shoddy reporting numbers come as 19 states are seeing increases in their coronavirus cases. In Arizona, things have gotten so bad again that the state has told its hospitals to activate emergency plans. More than 1.9 million people have been infected by the virus in the U.S., and more than 112,000 have already died. So it's been over a month since Donald Trump suggested ingesting disinfectant to fight COVID-19 and subsequently ended the circus of his daily briefings due to the backlash. The nation's top infectious disease expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci, has been virtually silenced ever since. but he emerged on Tuesday for an interview with CNBC in which he proclaimed the ongoing pandemic is far from over.
Now we have something that indeed turned out to be my worst nightmare, something that's highly transmissible in a period, if you just think about it, in a period of 4 months, it has devastated the world and it isn't over yet.
He continued asking, where is it going to end? We're still at the beginning of really understanding, and added that in just 4 months, the virus has, quote, devastated the whole world. And finally, yesterday, I told you about the Brevard County, Florida police union president who sent a Facebook post inviting cops accused of misconduct in other cities to apply for jobs in Florida. Well, thankfully, he's been suspended. Brevard County Sheriff Wayne Ivey said that Burt Gaiman, a lieutenant at the agency and president of the Brevard County Fraternal Order of Police, was suspended with pay while an internal investigation is conducted. Ivey called the posts disgusting. Why with pay? That's a vacation. Just saying. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.